connected well then is a reduced ability to produce water. Anytime you have two wells tapping the same source of water, the potential exists for that kind of interference. The only thing that need be done is to have one of the wells pump. Just the existence of two wells in a resource creates that potential. That doesn't necessarily create a condition that needs any kind of regulation. The regulation need come into play only if that interference, number one, indeed exists, and number two, is what the law requires us to find, and that is that it's substantial interference. And there is a definition adopted in rule of what is substantial interference.
So it would be hopefully an objective measurement of potential interference then.
Yes.
Thank you.
Looking in that same area there on page 3, line 17, the Water Resources Department finds a pattern of substantial interference between wells within the area in question. Go down to line 25. The department finds a pattern of substantial interference between wells within the area in question. What's the difference?
Ian.
Are we talking about a different department there on line 25?
No, I think.
Department of Geology?
No, Mr. Chair, in the section on starting in line 25, we are talking about interference between that groundwater appropriator and surface water appropriators in a hydraulically connected surface water source.
Okay, all right. The difference being those follow-ons, the big
yes.
A, B.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between subsection B and subsection C, is it that in subsection C we're referring specifically to geothermal resources?
Subsection C indeed does refer specifically to geothermal resources and those high-temperature geothermal resources managed by Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And B refers to just interference between groundwater appropriators tapping the same groundwater source.
Just regular vanilla water.
Yes.
Yeah. Any further questions of either of these two gentlemen?
Yes, I guess so.
Yes.
Maybe you could explain to me how this interference language affects irrigation wells and wells for private use, which, as I understand it, is exempt from most of your water rights statute. Would there be any problem with that kind of interference?
Well, let me take a try at that, Representative Soa, and then I'll turn to Fred when I get into trouble. Things like domestic uses or pumping of groundwater for livestock purposes is not exempt from the water law. It is really only exempt from the obligation to come in and get a permit from us.
Mm-hmm.
Last session, the legislature made it clear that we can rely on a number of things, but most typically our well logs, to give us a date associated with one of those exempt uses that did not have a permit. And once we had done that, unless there was specific language in a given area that prompted us to do otherwise, we would regulate there on a priority basis. And the question of what the priority was, what the date was of the particular use. A domestic well, obviously, in a lot of these aquifers, uses little enough water that they seldom would be one that interfered with a larger production well. But it would not be unusual to have a later priority production well that might interfere with some already existing exempt uses. And those are subject to regulation by the department, both in our Water Master Corps and in our planning process now, since the last session of the legislature.
Then if you had, if you declared a groundwater problem area and a irrigation well was permitted by you to be used, and that well drew the table down below or interfered with a one person in a private, with a private well, then you could, you'd be required under this to regulate irrigation well.
There's a complication there, and I don't want to run the risk of describing more than is needed, but we do try and make some calculation that people have, in one way or another, reasonably developed the resource. That is, we would not want a circumstance, if groundwater levels were 100 foot below the ground, to have a well go down to 101 feet. And because its use was very limited, could just sit there and use that water, with a good deal of water yet in that, in storage in that aquifer, have someone else come in and develop it more thoroughly and interfere with this well, we'd put some obligation on that party to have done a reasonable job of developing that resource. But once we get beyond that point, then the answer to your question is yes. And if need be, we would regulate the junior user in favor of the senior user.
And in all cases, senior user would be private wells and wells for watering livestock.
The junior senior user could be anyone in these instances, I think. I mean, it would simply depend on what the priorities were. You could have that kind of competition between two exempt uses. It could be between an exempt use and a permitted use. It could be between any of those uses and a municipality, I suppose, that presents its own set of difficulties in areas where we have municipalities and groundwater. One of the things that we are able to do as we look at the declaration of a critical area is to decide, in the course of shutting off big users, if that's a judgment we would make, we may do that, and we may feel that we can do that and still allow some of these relatively smaller uses to occur, and it would not be an unusual bit of regulation if we were to shut off production wells but allow continued use of exempt wells if we believe the resource could support that.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted you to say, that you could shut off the irrigation well and still allow the other uses.
Yes, we can, and that, in fact, is not untypical, I guess, in the critical areas that we've worked our way through to date.
I don't think in any of the ordinance or Butter Creek, if you have shut down any domestic wells, they haven't complained to me.
I don't think we have. I don't think the domestics have been affected in any of that activity.
And if you did, I would expect to hear about it.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I wanted to ask Bill, you mentioned there are two areas, the Hermiston area and up Tigard area there in this situation now. Are there any other areas of the state?
We have, what, six critical areas that are declared now?
We have
an area over in Cow Valley, over in the northern end of Mount Ure County. We actually have two areas, one on top of the other, what we call the ordinance area, where we've declared a critical circumstance in both the gravel aquifer and in the underlying basalt aquifer. We have the Cooper Bull Mountain area, where we've taken such regulation. Do we do so in the Dalles area? Or the Dalles area has a critical area that has been designated. The Butter Creek area, the larger area immediately to the east and south of the ordinance area, is another one that has been declared, and in fact we're in the process of regulation there now, and one that is scheduled for hearing, as I suspect the chairman knows, on into the first part of next month, is what we call the Stage Gulch area, which is the area that lies just adjacent to the Butter Creek area and east. So those are the areas that we've identified. In addition to that, we've had some areas where alert more quickly to the potential of groundwater decline. We've gone in and regulated those areas from further development, but have not had to cut back the current users. And the notable areas there, I guess, are what we call the Ella Butte area, which is an area up in this Hermiston area generally, between Hermiston and Boardman. And the largest of those areas, I suppose, we have in the state is the Christmas Valley Fort Rock area, which is a very large groundwater aquifer where some 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, our commission moved in, shut off further production uses out of that, although they allowed some limited commercial and the exempt uses. And that one seems to have stabilized rather nicely as we continue to watch it. It looks like we were there in time not to have to go through this agonizing business of reducing people's water use. So, as I say, our goal would be to be in a position where we were there preventing that kind of decline from occurring rather than trying to recover from that kind of decline with all of the problems that that creates for people that have come to rely on it.
You didn't mention any coastal areas. Can we assume then that there are no coastal areas in this area?
There are no coastal areas currently that have been designated critical in terms of groundwater. There are areas around the coast where groundwater is difficult to come by, as there are in other areas of the state. So describe those that we've had to take action on to date.
Thank you.
One of the interesting aspects of this Stage Gulch area he just mentioned, and I just recently received a copy of that notice from a friend at home, is that the wells of three municipal areas are included within that. The cities of Hermiston, Stanfield, and Echo draw their municipal supplies from wells within that area. I think that may be one of the first times you've had to contend with that issue.
In the Cooper Bull Mountain area, much of the demand that was on the resource there was from municipal wells. That wasn't exclusively so. At that time, the city of Beaverton had a fairly large production well. I knew something of that as mayor of the city of Beaverton at the time the critical area went in place there. Same thing was true of the city of Tigard. Same thing was true of some wells that are owned and operated now by one or another of the water districts there.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that water continues to be used within the boundaries of the critical area as we've defined it, although many of those folks have gone on those wells as kind of a standby and are getting water from other sources now, although they've not expressed any great enthusiasm for giving up those water rights to date. So that order remains in place because there is that fairly large demand that some of those municipalities could put on that resource, even though they may not be using it on a regular basis.
Okay, any further questions or comments here?
Well, not pertinent to what he's here for, but if it's these, you say they're not on the wells today, how long can they go without using them before you forfoot them for them?
Municipalities have
are
more...
Are they exempt?
Yeah, municipalities have a great deal more flexibility on the loss of those rights for abandonment than do other folks if that water is for municipal purposes.
Can a city, a small town, lose its water right?
Help me, Fred.
Not for abandonment.
I don't think so. I don't believe they can lose a water right, Representative Markham, under the normal standards of abandonment, that is, failure to use. The statutes have apparently, as a policy matter, tried to provide some broader latitude for municipalities. I expect, reflecting a judgment, that there was some reason and benefit to have municipalities kind of camp on that water. So they've been given some flexibilities in terms of how quickly they have to demonstrate the use of the water. And I think they would be, if not immune, at least insulated substantially from the normal abandonment procedures.
Sort of look forward to some expansion and development that some cities anticipate.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Anything further?
Either that or dumb city councilman.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and
thank
I assume you will stay to hear out the rest of this.
Indeed, we will.
There might even be a disagreement or two.
I can't imagine.
Now, we have the next in line was Marjo Nelson. Marjo, I understand you wanted to follow Dave. You two want to come up together? Dave Nelson and Marjo Nelson. I think that last name is a coincidence, isn't it?
My wife believes so, too.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dave Nelson of the Oregon Water Resources Congress, and we have a statement that's being distributed to you right now that was prepared and faxed to me just about an hour ago.
Excuse me just a minute, Dave. I'm
yes,
sorry.
Sir.
Mrs. Simmons, you had signed up after Marjo and before Dave. Do you have any objection to this order of appearance? Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. our statement was prepared and faxed to me about an hour ago by our attorney, Kip Lombard. I think it was prepared a little earlier than that, but I just received it about that time, and I apologize to you for the way it came over the machine. That's why it's only a half page on the first page, and then there's some stretched or elongated letters as you go through that, as Kip discusses the effect of House Bill 2192. Mr. Chairman, Kip has gone into a fair amount of background on the operation of the current law, and I might just ask you, I don't want to sit here and read to you, but there is some good background information in that. Should I trip through it fairly quickly, or what's your pleasure?
Well, yeah, let's see where we are and where we think we're going.
Under current law, a critical groundwater area may be identified and certain corrective measures undertaken to allow a proceeding for determination of a critical groundwater area. Statutes covering these matters generally are ORS 537-670, 537-675, 730, 735, and 740. House Bill 2192 would change the nature of the determining or the determination process and how it is conducted. We'll attempt to explain the differences as we understand them and the reasons to believe that one or more of the conditions exists as defined in the present ORS 537-731A-2G, and that's the determinations in Section 4 of the bill that Director Young was talking about. Among the conditions are declining groundwater levels, substantial interference between two or more groundwater claimants, interference between a groundwater claimant and a surface water appropriator who has an earlier priority date, etc. Current ORS 537-730 subsection 2 requires that the Commission hold a public hearing for the determination of a critical groundwater area. ORS 537-732 also requires notification of the public hearing. Notice is to be given to each water well contractor and each well drilling machine operator in the area, and to each person or public agency known to the Commission to be a claimant or appropriator of groundwater in the area. Notice is also to be published in a newspaper once a week for at least two consecutive weeks. If the area in question encompasses a city, notice is to be published in the city's newspaper, if any, and written notice is to be given to the mayor and the head of the governing body for the city. Corrective action by the Water Resources Commission may be undertaken by the Commission under ORS 537-735 if after the public hearing the Commission finds that any of the adverse circumstances exist and further finds that the public welfare, health, safety require corrective controls. Following such findings, the Commission may declare the area in question a critical groundwater area and institute any number of control provisions presently provided for in 537-735 sub 4. These control provisions include area-wide as well as individual restrictions, and I think there's an important distinction. Filing of an order. Once the Commission finalizes its order determining the existence of a critical groundwater order or critical groundwater area, a copy of the order is to be filed with the county clerk of each county within which any part of the critical groundwater lies to be recorded in the deed records of the county. House Bill 2192 proposes to place the determination of a critical groundwater area within the formalized rulemaking and contested case proceedings under the Administrative Procedures Act, Chapter 183. We are generally not opposed to the adoption of the APA procedures, but we do have some concerns on how the APA will change some of the prior proceedings. Generally, the determination of a critical groundwater area is now made by a formal rulemaking proceeding under the APA. Individual control strategies, however, are determined by a contested case proceeding or proceedings under the APA on an individual basis. Initiation of the proceedings. While a rulemaking proceeding to declare a critical groundwater area may be initiated as before under ORS 537-623 and 4, upon receipt of an application for a groundwater permit, there is no longer specific provision under 730 for a petition from the state geologist or any groundwater claimant. And I think the any groundwater claimant is an important designation. However, under ORS 183-390, an interested person may petition the agency upon request, or petition the agency to request adoption of a rule. So under the existing procedure, it appears that the request should come from a claimant of the groundwater in the area that's being considered. Under the new procedure, any interested person in the state, or presumably maybe even outside of the state, may be allowed to make that request for such a determination. Presumably, this would allow any interested person to attempt to initiate a rulemaking proceeding by petitioning the Water Resources Commission. House Bill 2192 does not substantially change the conditions which the commission must find to exist before declaring a critical groundwater area. These conditions are contained in subsection 4 of the bill. A public hearing is no longer required, as it is required under current proceeding. However, under the APA, a public hearing is required only upon request, on a written request from 10 individuals, or from upon request of an organization representing not fewer than 10 members. And that must be received by them within 15 days of the agency. It is also possible that under the APA that the agency may adopt temporary rules without hearing in the event of emergency conditions. We are concerned that the statutory 15-day limit period within which to request a public hearing is insufficient, considering that most of these proceedings will involve rural areas to which there will be delays in getting out the notices for opportunity for hearing. The broad notice requirements of current law would no longer apply. By incorporating the APA, ORS 183-335, subsection 1 would apply and require that the agency give notice of its intended action in the Secretary of State's bulletin, and frankly, none of our people subscribe to that, to persons who have requested notice specifically of the agency and in a manner established by rule of the agency, which provides a reasonable opportunity for interested persons to be notified of the agency's proposed action. Current procedural rules of the agency require that notice be given in the Secretary of State's bulletin by mailing a copy of the notice to persons and organizations on the commission or on the department's mailing list. And here's a significant distinction, by mailing a copy of the notice to certain state agencies. None of the current recipients of the department's rulemaking notices would be those interested persons most likely to be impacted by the determination of the existence of a critical groundwater area. We believe that that individual notices and publications still must be provided to ensure that all affected persons have a reasonable opportunity to request a hearing. Mr. Chairman, I might just make a comment here that that under the APA, it seems that the agency could serve notice of a public hearing on a specifically designated critical groundwater area that may be defined as this area. After the hearing, then perhaps the agency would have the authority to enlarge that area, which could be done in such a manner to leave those persons in the enlarged area without having the benefit of the notice directly that was supplied to the people within the area at the first notice. And we think that those folks, if the agency is going to draw the boundaries of the critical groundwater area larger than the initial proposal, that those folks who would then be included should have an opportunity to be included in a subsequent hearing on that process. Before instituting corrective action, the commission is no longer required to find that the public welfare, health, or safety require the corrective action. We would add, however, parenthetically, that adopting the APA procedures, the economic impact on small business would apply. Under ORS 537-735, as amended by Section 5, the commission would adopt some broad control measures, including electing the area. I think that's what that says. Closing the area to further appropriation of groundwater, limiting permissible total withdrawal of groundwater, et cetera. Individual corrective measures are now covered under subsection 2 of the bill and would require that the commission initiate a contested case proceeding to limit the use of groundwater in the area. Such a proceeding would allow for more formalized inclusion of parties and presentations of evidence with the attendant right of appeal under the Administrative Procedures Act. Filing of orders, and there's another point that we don't comment on that may be important to an individual area. Procedures conducted under the Administrative Procedures Act, as I understand, and Mr. Young may correct this or legislative counsel, would be appealable only to the Court of Appeals, and the individual may not have a court hearing on the facts of the case, but only on the procedures and the propriety under which the proceeding was determined. Under the current process, the affected parties can appeal or can go to their circuit court of their jurisdiction for redress of whatever they feel is in error. Similarly, current law as similarly to current law, a rule adopted under the Act would be filed with the county clerk and recorded in the deed records of the county affected by the rule. We note that the bill does not make any amendment to ORS 537-675. Subparagraph 2 or 3, whatever that is, of the statute incorporates existing language of a determination of critical groundwater area. We believe a housekeeping amendment would be appropriate under that section. Kip further suggests, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, amendments that we have attached to that dated 1/29/91 that outline amendments to sections 4 and to section 7 on the second page to expand the existing or to clarify and expand the notice required under 2192 should you choose to go forward with it. I'd be happy to work with the committee or the department to consider those amendments at the time.
Questions, the committee? From all this, do I deduce that your exception here is not with a basic intent and a philosophy, but with the procedural aspects of notification in the event that critical groundwater area is being contemplated by the department?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We have no complaints ideals or necessities in certain areas of adopting critical groundwater areas. Our interest is in the what you would describe as full and complete notification of the affected parties so that they have the appropriate opportunity to enter into the discussions.
Do you feel that House Bill 2192 is written and if put into effect could lead to the declaration of a critical groundwater area, including people and claimants who had no way of knowing that it was coming?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's always possible, but I think that it would be more possible by conversion from a rather, as Mr. Young describes, a rather cumbersome, precise process to a more generalized process.
I'm confused.
Don't feel bad.
I think it's a procedural issue that we're dealing with here, as opposed to a basic policy issue.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Marjo, is something you wanted to add here before we pursue this further?
Yes, sir. Thank you. It is also the Marjo Nelson, Daryl Rocks Community Association. We are UF zone and also individual domestic wells in our, and we're also included now in the basin plan, the Willamette Basin plan. We're also are concerned about the notification process. Just even after going through a big deal with our water in one big well coming in impacting their land owners around them with no notification at all. In that case, I can see what could happen in the same thing in a critical groundwater area. We have no problem with being notified by regular mail instead of certification mail, but we do have a problem with being dropped off completely.
Do you feel there had been any omissions in the notification procedure that might have led to some problems in your area?
There was only one person notified in our area, and that only was because it was a land use issue, and the well house was in question. That's the only way we even knew that this big well was coming in. There is no notification when a big well comes into an area at all if there's not a critical groundwater area.
Okay, but this was not involved in an actual critical groundwater area declaration then. This was a potential of a competing well.
Correct, but if you're in a serious management zone, you're waiting for the other shoe to fall, then you feel you know that your area could very well be involved into a critical groundwater area. And I know the emotion and everything that the people in the community went through because of not the notification process, of any notification process. People in the rural areas don't even take the same newspapers. You know, that I checked around in my area, and one person may take one paper and some take none. So if we went to just that, then people would not get the word.
Wouldn't that really be kind of an issue that's separate from the one we're focusing on here today, though?
I don't think so, because it was that's one thing that's in there, is that to change the notification process.
Yeah, but if we look at the relating clause, it relates specifically to critical groundwater areas. I think we'd be hard-pressed to tuck that into this. Now, maybe it's an issue that he's looking at, but I think we'd be looking at a separate kind of bill, I really do.
Do you really think? Isn't it in there, really?
I'm sorry, I was reading something.
Oh, okay. Would you mind explaining that to him again?
Well, did you hear what Mark